Illustrated. My name is Bill, volunteer reader here at Sun Sounds of Arizona. Let's begin this week's reading with a feature from Sports Illustrated's website. This feature is entitled, No One Will Save the Suns. Phoenix gambled on an expensive, inflexible roster that hasn't paid off, and the NBA trade deadline provided no savior or change in direction. And this Sports Illustrated feature is written by Chris Mannix of Sports Illustrated. Still bruised from a 140-109 loss to the Oklahoma City Thunder last week, the Phoenix Suns settled on a consistent message. It's fixable. An offense that could muster just 16 points in the same 12 minutes, it's fixable. The minimum effort displayed in the second half of a nationally televised game, you guessed it, it's fixable. Quote, I think that we've shown flashes over the last few weeks, kind of how we want to play, unquote, Suns point guard Tyus Jones said. Added Devin Booker, quote, I just believe in the work. I believe in the process. The journey's not always pretty, unquote. But it isn't fixable, and it's likely that the Suns recognize that too. They didn't just lose last Wednesday. They were bludgeoned. The game was competitive in the first half. 4 minutes into the fourth quarter, Suns coach Mike Budenholzer emptied the bench. With Kevin Durant out, officially sidelined by a pre-trade deadline ankle sprain, Phoenix's offense stalled. The Suns' numbers in the third quarter, 7.7% from the floor and 0-for-5 from three-point range. Of Phoenix's 16 points, 14 came from free throws. They had a push coming out of the third quarter, Budenholzer said, and we weren't able to match it, unquote. Phoenix's loss last week locked it into a three-way tie with the Sacramento Kings and the Golden State Warriors for the 9th and 10th spots in the Western Conference. Help isn't coming. Efforts to acquire Jimmy Butler ended when Butler was dealt to the Warriors. Talks with Golden State for Durant died when Durant made it clear that he had no interest in a Warriors reunion. Bradley Beal's no-trade clause didn't matter. No team wanted to take on the $100 million-plus Beal has left on his contract. Matt Ishbia has come out swinging since buying control of the Suns in 2022, but his eagerness to microwave a contender has pushed the team to the brink of disaster. The Suns overpaid for Durant and never should have traded for Beal. They fired Frank Vogel after one season and replaced him with Budenholzer. Bud is a capable coach, but Phoenix's 13th-ranked defense under Vogel has slipped to 24th this season, according to NBA.com, while the offense has dropped from 10th to 13th. Ishbia's passion is admirable. His judgment has proven to be off. Budenholzer understood the expectations. Despite Phoenix's struggles last season, ownership believed that it had a championship core. Better health, better coaching, the Suns reasoned, and this team could take off. Instead, in a conference led by young, athletic teams, Phoenix has looked old and slow. Has any of this surprised Budenholzer? Quote, "I think all of us are pushing to be better," Budenholzer said. "I think there's high expectations. We've got good players. We've got a good roster. I think we'd like to be better than we are. I think we got to acknowledge that. But every NBA job, every NBA team is unique and a challenge. So I wouldn't say it's been harder or different. The players are great. Figuring out, hopefully, how to put them in their best spots is the greatest challenge of coaching in the NBA," unquote. So what has gone wrong? "I usually focus on the process and what are we doing every day," Budenholzer said. "Are we getting better? And I think we've shown flashes of that. We've shown growth, but it hasn't had the end results that I think we'd all want and expect and like. But I think that we're pushing, we're getting better. That's what we got to keep doing," unquote. In a dream scenario, the Suns can get healthy, put the trade deadline behind them, and make a run. A 500 record has Phoenix in the play-in mix, but the Suns are just 3 games back of the Los Angeles Clippers for the 6th seed. Inside the Suns' locker room, players admit the constant trade chatter has been taxing. "As much as everyone wants to say you're blocking it out, everyone sees it," Jones said. "Everyone hears it, and it's around. But at the same time, you're trying to lock in. And so again, when we show up, we got to be professional. We got to do our job. We got to lock in and lock in better," unquote. And even with the struggles, Jones said, the signs of life are there. "We've just shown it throughout the year," Jones said. "At times we showed it early in the year. So I know that capability is there. I know that the hunger of the guys is still there and we want to improve. We want to be better. So I'm confident in the group that we've got, and I'm confident in each and every person in the locker room. And I think if you ask them, they'll say the same," unquote. Booker agreed, sort of. Quote, "I'm always going to say it's fixable," Booker said. But even during Phoenix's 8-win, 1-loss start, Booker saw flaws. "I always said at the start of the season that we were squeezing by. It still wasn't the type of wins that you like to see that could have went either way going down the stretch. So if we're beating teams and sitting in the fourth quarter, that's a different thing. But it was coming down to tough shot-making in the fourth quarter. We need to be better now," unquote. Indeed. Butler wouldn't have rescued Phoenix, but there's no Butler, no anyone coming to help the Suns now. Phoenix bet big on an expensive roster, aging at key positions, and now they have to try to win with it. The Suns had high praise for Oklahoma City last Wednesday. Quote, "They have a well-oiled machine over there," Booker said. The Thunder are the bar in the West. Phoenix has less than half of this season left to figure out how to jump over them. And again, that feature is entitled "No One Will Save the Suns," written by Sports Illustrated writer Chris Mannix. And from NBA basketball, let's turn now to a college basketball feature. Headline reads, Oregon Ducks basketball faces Wisconsin in crucial NCAA tournament push. The Oregon Ducks basketball team is gearing up for pivotal road games against the Iowa Hawkeyes and the number 11 Wisconsin Badgers as they fight to secure a spot in the NCAA tournament. With postseason ambitions on the line, the Ducks must continue their winning momentum to strengthen their resume in the competitive Big Ten. And this feature, written by Sports Illustrated writer Olivia Cleary. Dateline, Eugene, Oregon. After back-to-back wins at home against Northwestern and Rutgers, the Oregon Ducks men's basketball team appears to have worked out previous issues that resulted in the team losing five consecutive games earlier in the month. With postseason goals in mind, the Ducks must continue to add wins to their record to earn a spot in the Big Ten Conference tournament as well as the NCAA tournament. Unlike the women's basketball team, which has already secured a spot in the Big Ten Conference tournament, the Ducks have yet to do so, largely due to the team's five-game skid. 15 teams will qualify for the tournament. Three first-round games are slated for Wednesday, March the 12th, with four games contested on Thursday, March 13th, and Friday, March 14th. The top four seeds will receive first and second round byes and advance to Friday's quarterfinal round. With recent wins over Rutgers and Northwestern, Oregon has improved to number 8 in the Big Ten Conference with a 7-8 conference record, tied with Nebraska and Ohio State. The Ducks boast an 18-win, 8-loss overall record, which includes impressive wins over number 7 Texas A&M and number 4 Alabama. Although Oregon hasn't broken back into the AP Top 25 poll quite yet, the Ducks, with 18 wins under their belts, are more than likely already locked into the tournament because of statement wins during their strong non-conference schedule. Oregon is currently ranked 31st in the NCAA's NET rankings and holds a 6-6 record against Quad 1 teams. The Ducks also don't have any losses to opponents in the Quad 3 or Quad 4 categories. Both CBS Sports' Jerry Palm and ESPN's Joe Lunardi project the Oregon Ducks to make the NCAA tournament, but neither expects them to secure a high seed. CBS places Oregon as a number 7 seed in the East region, while ESPN projects them as a number 8 seed in the West region. According to CBS, the Ducks would be in the number 7 seed playing in Wichita against number 10 seed Oklahoma. A victory would set up a matchup against either number 2 seed Houston or number 15 seed Montana. The East region is led by number 1 seed Duke and also features Big Ten teams Nebraska, UCLA, and Michigan. Meanwhile, ESPN's projection has Oregon as the number 8 seed in the West region, competing in the Raleigh pod against number 9 seed New Mexico. A win there would advance them to face the winner of number 1 seed Florida and number 16 seed Norfolk State, offering a potentially favorable path if the Ducks can navigate the first two rounds. But there is still a lot of basketball left to play, which could dramatically influence Oregon's tournament resume. Last evening, the Ducks faced Iowa on the road before heading to number 11 Wisconsin on Saturday. Both games give the Ducks two more chances for a quad one win, including a big opportunity to upset a top-ranked Wisconsin team that sits at number 4 in the conference. Oregon's upcoming matchup against the Badgers will provide valuable insight into the team's potential as they approach the most important stretch of the season. How the Ducks perform against Wisconsin could reveal just how prepared they are to compete at a high level in March. A strong showing this week on the road would not only boost Oregon's tournament resume, but also build momentum and confidence as the team heads into the postseason. Winning one of two on the road this week can be a difference-making factor for Oregon's resume, potentially giving the Ducks a chance at moving beyond a 7 seed in the tournament next month. We feel like we have enough talent, but we have to play the right way to maximize that talent, said Oregon assistant coach Tony Stubblefield. This time of year is when you want to be playing your best basketball. We're already locked in and focused on Iowa and this road trip that we have, unquote, Stubblefield continued. The Ducks will take on Wisconsin this Saturday, February 22nd, at 10 a.m. Mountain Time. And again, that feature entitled Oregon Ducks Basketball Faces Iowa and Wisconsin in Crucial NCAA Tournament Push, written by Olivia Cleary of Sports Illustrated. And in another college basketball feature, this one's entitled Michigan State Enters the Gauntlet Schedule That Fans Have Dreaded. Michigan State will face 5 ranked opponents in their last 6 games of the season. And this feature is written by Sports Illustrated writer Jack Lintner. Michigan State enters the final stretch of its regular season with 6 crucial games remaining, 5 of which are against ranked opponents. This stretch will test the resilience, determination, and skill of the Spartans as they look to finish the season strong and make a statement in the Big Ten. The upcoming games are not for the faint of heart. Michigan State will face Purdue, Michigan twice, Wisconsin, and Maryland. Each of these teams brings a unique challenge, and none of them can be taken lightly. The rivalry games against Michigan are particularly intense, and with both teams having strong seasons, these games are bound to be filled with energy and drama. The Spartans will need to be at their best, especially in a high-pressure environment like that of a Michigan rivalry. Defeating the Wolverines could be a morale-boosting victory that propels Michigan State forward as they prepare for postseason play. In addition to Michigan, Purdue, Wisconsin, and Maryland are all tough opponents that currently sit among the top teams in the conference. Maryland has been playing with great consistency. Wisconsin is known for its tough defense, and Purdue, led by one of the best players in the country, Trey Kaufman Wren, will be a formidable foe. To succeed, Michigan State will need to execute well on both ends of the floor, focusing on defense, rebounding, and getting key contributions from its playmakers. Amidst these tough tests, there is one unranked opponent in Iowa. While Iowa may not be ranked, they are still a dangerous team capable of pulling off upsets. This game cannot be overlooked as Iowa has a potent offense and a knack for making games difficult for their opponents. Michigan State needs to approach this contest with the same intensity and focus as its ranked opponents, understanding that any slip-up could cost them dearly in their quest to finish the season strong. With only 6 games left, the Spartans are at a critical juncture. They need to play hard, stay disciplined, and win the games in front of them. Every contest is an opportunity to solidify their position in the Big Ten standings and prove that they can compete with the best. This is the time for Michigan State to rise to the occasion, leaving no doubt that it belongs among the elite teams in the conference. The road to the postseason starts now. And again, that feature is entitled Michigan State Enters the Gauntlet Schedule That Fans Have Dreaded, written by Sports Illustrated writer Jack Lintner. And in another men's college basketball feature, this headline reads, Arizona State has a clear path to 2025 NCAA tournament. Because of their tough schedule, the Sun Devils have a high NET rating. And this feature written by Sports Illustrated writer Ben Sherman. When all is said and done, it's likely that 12 of Arizona State's opponents this season will be playing in the 2025 NCAA tournament. From non-conference matchups versus Gonzaga, St. Mary's, New Mexico, and Florida to the gauntlet of the Big 12, the ASU men's basketball team has played one of the toughest schedules in the nation. And because of that, they're still in the hunt for a March Madness berth. According to KenPom, the Sun Devils have played the 9th toughest schedule in the country, tougher than Duke, Kansas, Tennessee, Wisconsin, and Florida. The Sun Devils, who currently have a record of 12 wins, 13 losses, are the only team in the top 10 of schedule strength with a sub-500 record. And KenPom's luck rating suggests that ASU should have more than 12 victories. Arizona State is 3-11 in the Big 12, but that record could easily be flipped. The Sun Devils have had legitimate chances to win 8 of the 11 games they've lost, including 2 overtime games. Arizona State's overall KenPom ranking is number 61, 4 spots better than their NCAA net ranking of number 65. Those rankings, paired with the top 10 strength of schedule, suggest that the Sun Devils could quickly climb into NCAA tournament contention with 6 or 7 more quality wins. The Sun Devils need to go on a run, which is easier said than done in the Big 12. But after Saturday's 74-70 loss to TCU, they have little margin for error. If Arizona State can go 5 wins, 1 loss over their final 6 games and win at least 2 games in the Big 12 tournament, they'll have a legitimate shot to get into the NCAA tournament. That would put them at 19 wins, 15 losses, and likely result in an NET ranking in the top 35. Ohio State, which currently has a record of 15-11, is a good comparison for Bobby Hurley's team. The Buckeyes have played the 7th toughest schedule in the nation and are ranked number 30 in the NET and are projected to be a number 9 seed in the NCAA tournament. Looking at their remaining schedule, it's probable that the Buckeyes will be 18 wins, 13 losses heading into the Big Ten tournament, and in contention for a number 9, 10, or 11 seed in the NCAA tournament. Obviously, the Sun Devils can still earn an automatic NCAA tournament berth by winning the Big 12 tournament. And if they get hot like they did in November, and they get five-star freshman Jaden Quaintance back, watch out. We are still here. Don't give up on us yet, Arizona State guard B.J. Freeman said after the loss to TCU. We've still got six games. Then we've got a tournament. You guys going to see a different change of basketball starting on Tuesday, unquote. And here's a look at Arizona State's six remaining Big 12 games with ESPN's FPI prediction for each game. First, they have a game against Houston. They have an 11% chance of winning that one. Next, they'll be playing at Kansas State, where they have a 35% chance to win. Then a home game against BYU, where they have a 40% chance to win. Then at Utah, where they have a 35% chance to win. Then at Arizona, where they have a 10% chance to win. Finally, they'll close their regular season with a home game against Texas Tech, where they have a 25% chance to win. And again, that feature is entitled Arizona State Has a Clear Path to 2025 NCAA Tournament, written by Ben Sherman of Sports Illustrated. And in one more college basketball feature, this one's headlined What Tommy Lloyd Said After Arizona's Win Over Baylor. The Wildcats completed a season sweep of the Bears. And this feature also written by Ben Sherman. The Arizona Wildcats continue to prove that they're one of the toughest teams in college basketball. A little over 48 hours after a knockdown, drag-out loss to Houston, Tommy Lloyd's team marched into one of the loudest venues in the country and emerged with an impressive 74-67 Big 12 road victory over Baylor. Lloyd started a bigger lineup against the Bears, featuring 7-foot redshirt sophomore Henri Vissar and 6-foot-8 junior Toby Awaka, and it paid off. Led by Awaka's 14 points and 12 rebounds, the Wildcats outscored Baylor 42-34 in the paint and out-rebounded them 37-31. Vissar filled up the stat sheet with 13 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, and 2 steals. Arizona, which now has a record of 18 wins, 8 losses, with a conference record of 12-3, remains 2 games behind first place Houston with 5 games to play. The Wildcats will get a couple of days off before hosting BYU on Saturday. Here's what Arizona head coach Tommy Lloyd said after his team beat Baylor for the second time. Quote, "The biggest thing I thought we did well was show up with energy. I thought our approach was going to be critical to this game. Obviously, we're coming off a 2-game skid against good teams, one on the road, one at home. We felt like we had opportunities to win both those games, and you just don't want to let a third one slip through," unquote. Coach Lloyd also spoke on challenging his team. Quote, "We challenge these guys every way we can. We're coaches. We're manufacturing challenges. We've got a good group of guys. Things haven't come easy for this team, but I think that that could also be a little bit life in the Big 12. And we are learning on the fly," unquote. Lloyd also spoke about Henri Vissar's clutch free throws. Quote, "That's big time for Henri. Obviously, last game he had a few free throws that he probably wishes he'd have back. Henry's a great shooter and a great free throw shooter and someone that we're comfortable having in at the end of the game just for his ball skills and his hands. I know he's a good shooter, and so I'm proud that he had an opportunity to step up today," unquote. And Coach Lloyd also spoke on Arizona's big lineup against Baylor. Quote, "It's been something that's been on my mind for a while. It's no demotion for anyone. I've been wanting to play this big lineup for a while. And when Trey Townsend went out, we got a few opportunities to try it a little bit more. And then last game, I wanted to do a little bit more, but I found once the flow of the game got going, fouls dictate a lot of your subs," unquote. And Lloyd also spoke post-game about Anthony Dell'Orso, quote, "One guy I do want to mention is Anthony Dell'Orso. It hasn't come easy for him, and I've really encouraged him to hunt more shots and just become more of a catch-and-shoot threat. I thought he gave us some great minutes tonight and really, really helped us out. He didn't get to close the game, but I thought that his early contributions should not go unnoticed. Listen, this kid can really shoot the ball. I think he's just got to put on his shooting hat more and a little less of his dribbling hat and hunt catch-and-shoot shots. The beautiful thing about him is he's good enough on offense. If it's a hard closeout, he can put the ball on the ground. But I want him to shoot first and ask questions later, guy. If he's not there stroking threes, that other coach is not feeling good. And in order for us to get to our ceiling, we've got to capitalize on everybody on our team, maximizing their opportunities and their roles," unquote. And finally, Coach Lloyd said after the game, "I could think about every excuse in the book, but I'm not an excuse guy. I don't live in hypotheticals. I don't make excuses. We had two games that I thought were winnable. I've rewatched them, and I rewatched the end of them really closely and try to figure out ways I can get better and help our guys a little bit more. And then, obviously, giving them some advice on how I think that we can close these games better, because I think we've been a good closing team the last couple of months," unquote. And again, that short feature entitled "What Tommy Lloyd Said After Arizona's Win Over Baylor," written by Sports Illustrated writer Ben Sherman. And the next feature from this month's Sports Illustrated edition is entitled "The NFL's 50 Greatest Games." Some are simply known by a word or two, like the drive, the catch. Others are noteworthy for amazing individual efforts. What they have in common is that they are the most monumental matchups of the Super Bowl era. And this feature, written by Sports Illustrated writer Matt Verderam. Number 50 on the all-time list, New Orleans Saints 31, Minnesota Vikings 28. That was the final score of the 2009 NFC Championship game, a.k.a. the Bounty Gate game, ending Brett Favre's last Super Bowl run and sent the New Orleans Saints to their first and only title. Number 49 on the list, Houston Oilers 35, Miami Dolphins 30. A Monday night affair in November of 1978 made a star of rookie Earl Campbell, who had 199 yards rushing that night for the Love Ya Blue Oilers of Bum Phillips. Number 48 on the list, Green Bay Packers 34, Dallas Cowboys 27. With a berth in Super Bowl I on the line at Lambeau on New Year's Day 1967, Green Bay intercepted Dallas at the goal line in the dying seconds. Number 47 on the list, Oakland Raiders 14, Cleveland Browns 12. Red Right 88, words that live in infamy in Cleveland, thanks to Brian Sipes' late interception on that play in the January of 1981 divisional playoff. Number 46 on the list, Oakland Raiders 21, San Diego Chargers 20. The Week 2 affair in 1978 led to a rule change after Oakland won thanks to Dave Casper's intentional fourth down fumble led to the go-ahead score. Number 45 on the list, Atlanta Falcons 30, Minnesota Vikings 27. Vikings kicker Gary Anderson, who had been perfect all year, missed a field goal that would have iced the 1998 NFC title game. Atlanta won it in overtime. Number 44 on the all-time list, Kansas City Chiefs 38, Philadelphia Eagles 35. Playing on a bum ankle, Patrick Mahomes drove Kansas City to the winning field goal in Super Bowl 57, the most wide open in history. Number 43 on the list of greatest games of all time in the NFL, Baltimore Ravens 38, Denver Broncos 35. Baltimore leveled this 2012 divisional game on a 70-yard touchdown pass from Joe Flacco to Jacoby Jones with 31 seconds left, then won in double OT. Next, let's look at number 42 of the top 50 all-time NFL games, Super Bowl IV. Kansas City Chiefs 23, Minnesota Vikings 7. The drama was lacking, but the import wasn't. Kansas City's pre-merger Super Bowl IV win as 12-point underdogs was the AFL's second in four tries. Next one on the list, number 41 of all time, Cleveland Browns 31, New York Jets 21. That was the final score of the very first Monday Night Football game in September of 1970, and it changed how fans viewed pro football as well as pro football itself. Number 40 on the all-time list, Chicago Bears 20, Philadelphia Eagles 12. On New Year's Eve of 1988, the Bears won a divisional playoff game that few saw, or saw clearly at least, thanks to an invasion of fog from Lake Michigan. Number 39 on the all-time list, final score, Los Angeles Rams 54, Kansas City Chiefs 51 in the year 2018. The teams entered Week 11 of the 2018 season with a combined 18-win, 2-loss record and did not disappoint, producing the highest-scoring Monday night game in history. Number 38 in the all-time list of great games, the New York Giants 15, the San Francisco 49ers 13. The gritty 1990 NFC title game saw Joe Montana get knocked out of his final 49ers start and the Giants win without scoring a touchdown. Number 37 in the all-time list of great NFL games, the Cincinnati Bengals 27, the San Diego Chargers 7. With a wind chill of negative 59 degrees, the 1981 AFC title game, also known as the Freezer Bowl, is the coldest in history. Not surprisingly, the California team did not fare well. Number 36 in the all-time great list, the Philadelphia Eagles, 19, the New York Giants, 17. This was the 1978 Miracle of the Meadowlands, which saw the Giants hand off instead of taking a knee late. Philly returned the ensuing fumble for the winning touchdown. Number 35 in the list of all-time great NFL games, the New England Patriots, 37, the Kansas City Chiefs, 31. The torch didn't quite pass as Tom Brady rallied the Patriots to take down first-year starter Pat Mahomes and the Chiefs in overtime in the 2018 AFC title game. Number 34 in the all-time great list, Miami Dolphins 14, Washington 7. A Super Bowl in which the most memorable play was a kicker's comically errant pass nonetheless secured Miami's perfect 1972 season. Number 33 in the all-time list, final score, Pittsburgh Steelers 21, Dallas Cowboys 17. Lynn Swann dominated Super Bowl X, catching 4 passes for 161 yards. The rest of the Steelers had 48 yards receiving, but it was enough. Number 32 in the all-time list of great NFL games, the Minnesota Vikings 29, the New Orleans Saints 24. So often on the wrong side of fantastic finishes, the Vikings flipped the script in January of 2018, winning a playoff game on a last play 61-yard touchdown pass. Number 31 in the all-time list, final score, Denver Broncos 31, Green Bay Packers 24. John Elway finally got his ring in 1998, helicoptering his 11-point underdogs to a win and snapping the AFC's streak of Super Bowl losses at 13. And number 30 in the all-time list of great NFL games, final score, Oakland Raiders 28, Miami Dolphins 26. Ken Stabler's last-minute toss while being sacked was snagged by Clarence Davis in a quote-unquote sea of hands, giving Oakland a berth in the 1974 AFC title game. Number 29 on the all-time list of greatest NFL games, final score, Oakland Raiders 37, Baltimore Colts 31. Dave Casper's ghost to the post catch set up the tying field goal in the 1977 divisional playoff, and then he tacked on the game-winning touchdown in overtime. Number 28 in the all-time list, final score, Denver Broncos 38, Cleveland Browns 33. Cleveland's remarkable comeback in the 1987 AFC Championship game came up short at the goal line on Ernest Biner's fumble. Number 27 in the all-time list of great NFL games, final score, Dallas Cowboys 17, Minnesota Vikings 14. Devout Catholic Roger Staubach brought the Hail Mary to football in 1975 when his last-second heave was hauled in by Drew Pearson for a touchdown. Number 26 in the all-time list. Final score, Pittsburgh Steelers 35, Dallas Cowboys 31. The Steelers solidified their status as the team of the 1970s with a thrilling win in Super Bowl XIII behind Terry Bradshaw's 318 passing yards. Next, we look at the number 25 all-time great NFL game played on November 17, 1968, Week 11 at Oakland Coliseum. Final score, Oakland Raiders 43, New York Jets 32. It was the best ending that nobody, at least on the East Coast, saw. The Jets, in the midst of an eventual Super Bowl run, traveled to Oakland for a key AFL game against the Raiders, who were looking to defend their league title. New York was leading 32-29 with less than 2 minutes remaining when the clock struck 7 p.m. Eastern Time. NBC made the decision to switch away from the game, going to its regularly scheduled programming. Heidi, a made-for-TV adaptation about an orphan living with her grandmother in the Swiss Alps. Oakland then proceeded to stage a remarkable rally, scoring twice in the last minute, including one on the return of a fumbled kickoff, to win 43-32 as fans blew up the NBC switchboard. Next on the list, the number 24 all-time great NFL game, the Kansas City Chiefs 25, the San Francisco 49ers 22. That was played on February 11th, 2024, Super Bowl 58. For only the second time in its history, the Super Bowl needed more than 60 minutes. The Chiefs and the 49ers battled in Las Vegas, where Harrison Butker's 29-yard field goal at the final gun tied the game at 19-all. In overtime, the Niners kicked a field goal before watching Patrick Mahomes march Kansas City 75 yards to a game-winning touchdown. The result was the culmination of a tough season in which the Chiefs endured a 3-win, 5-loss stretch and had to hit the road after the wild card round as a result. But Travis Kelce, who had 9 catches against San Francisco, and Kansas City persevered, solidifying its dynasty by winning its third title in 5 years and becoming the first team to win consecutive championships since the 2003-2004 Patriots. And number 23 on the all-time list, this game was played on Christmas, December 25th, 1971, the AFC Divisional Playoff. Final score, Miami Dolphins 27, Kansas City Chiefs 24. And this game was played at Kansas City's Municipal Stadium. Kansas City's pre-Arrowhead home got quite a send-off in the final football game that it hosted, the longest contest in NFL history. With the Chiefs up 24-17 in the fourth quarter, Kansas City fans looked set to have a Merry Christmas. But Miami tied the game on Marv Fleming's touchdown reception with a minute 25 left. Nonetheless, KC had a chance to win. A chip shot 31-yard field goal from Jan Stenerud. But the future Hall of Famer sent the kick wide right, one of his 3 misses on the day. The Dolphins finally won in the second overtime on Garo Yapremian's 37-yard field goal, bringing an end to the marathon after nearly 83 minutes and overshadowing one of the greatest individual efforts in league history. Chiefs running back Ed Podolak's 350 all-purpose yards. Next, we look at the number 22 all-time great NFL game played January 31st, 1988. Super Bowl 22 played at Jack Murphy Stadium. Final score, Washington 42, Denver Broncos 10. Some games are memorable for what they meant, not for how they were played. Super Bowl 22, played in San Diego, was a blowout by halftime. After falling behind 10-0 to John Elway's Broncos, Washington scored 5 touchdowns in the second quarter to take a 35-10 lead at the half. But the score takes a back seat to the history made by Doug Williams, who became the first black quarterback to start and win a Super Bowl. Williams was brilliant, throwing for 340 yards, a Super Bowl record at the time, and 4 touchdowns, all of which came during that record-setting second period. His MVP performance blazed a trail, followed by black quarterbacks Patrick Mahomes and Russell Wilson. And number 21 in the list of the all-time great NFL games, the St. Louis Rams 23, the Tennessee Titans 16. This was Super Bowl 34, played on January 30th, 2000 at the Georgia Dome. Few teams have written a better script than the 1999 Rams. After losing starting quarterback Trent Green in the preseason to a torn ACL, St. Louis turned to Kurt Warner, a former NFL Europe and Arena League player. Warner proceeded to lead St. Louis to an NFC best 13-3 record and a matchup with the Titans in Atlanta. Tennessee fell behind 16-0 in the third quarter before rallying to tie the game. But with a minute 54 remaining in the fourth quarter, Warner launched a 73-yard scoring strike to Isaac Bruce, putting the Rams in front 23-16. Quarterback Steve McNair drove Tennessee down the field, ultimately connecting with Kevin Dyson as time expired, but Rams linebacker Mike Jones stopped the Titans receiver inches short of the goal line. So that's the first 30 from number 50 down to number 21 of the top 50 all-time great NFL games. To select the games on this list, Sports Illustrated had each voter rank their personal top 50 and then assigned each game points from 50 for a number 1 vote down to 1 vote for number 50. And it looks like it was a 47-member panel who made the selection of these top 50 games. Next week, I'll read the top 20 of the top 50. Let's close this hour with a feature entitled, Caitlin Clark's Agent Makes a Bold Statement About Clients' Value to the WNBA. And this short feature written by Ryan Phillips of Sports Illustrated. Caitlin Clark's agent thinks that it's not possible for the WNBA to compensate her client fairly. On Monday, Clark's agent, Aaron Kane, told ESPN the 23-year-old Indiana Fever star is unlikely to ever be paid what she's really worth to the league. Quote, "Will Caitlin Clark ever be paid by the WNBA what she's really worth to that league? I don't think that's possible," she said. Kane represents a number of WNBA players, including reigning Defensive Player of the Year, Nafisa Collier. Quote, "She's part of a larger player body. They all need to be paid more," Kane said. "She should be recognized for what she has done and what she has brought to the league from an economic standpoint. It's as simple as that," unquote. Clark and a loaded rookie class in 2024 is credited with helping the league's popularity explode, leading to the most watched regular season in 24 years and record attendance numbers. She's expected to earn just more than $78,000 during the 2025 season. WNBA salaries range from just more than $64,000 on the lower end to $241,900 on the high end. The salaries are collectively bargained, and the players' union exercised its right to opt out of the current collective bargaining agreement, which will end after the 2025 season. There is no doubt that higher salaries will be a huge part of those negotiations in a few months. And again, that short feature entitled "Caitlin Clark's Agent Makes a Bold Statement About Clients' Value to the WNBA" by Ryan Phillips of Sports Illustrated. And that's all the time that we have for this reading of Sports Illustrated.
My name is Bill, volunteer reader here at Sun Sounds of Arizona. Thanks for tuning in to this week's edition of Sports Illustrated. If you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org/broadcast info. And you could hear Sun Sounds on your smart home device.